Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mind Body Green's beauty podcast, Clean Beauty School. I am your host and Mind Body Green's beauty director, Alexandra Engler. On this podcast, we explore beauty through the lens of well-being. And on today's episode, we are talking about how to help your skin heal itself. This is a topic that any of our listeners will know I love. So I'm so excited about this this episode today, and I'm so excited about our guest. So without further ado, I will introduce our fabulous esthetician, Athena Hewitt. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Alexandra. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to have you. We were chatting beforehand that I'm already a fan of yours. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing all of your advice and pick your brain. But before we get into some of the meatier topics, I do love to hear about your story and let our audience get to know you a little bit better. So, you know, what was your journey into beauty, specifically becoming an esthetician?
I'd say that my journey started in childhood, really. I grew up in the farmlands of California. I also grew up as an only child. I do have a sister, but we didn't grow up together. So I spent a lot of time out in the dirt being creative. And I think that that really formed me in some way. I also watched parents that worked really hard in the agricultural industry. I recognized that, you know, you can build something with hard work. I also had a mother that was very into skincare, not just like having hordes of brands, but also into like making her own skincare. We would make masks from health food books. And yeah, that was a very common thing in our house. I was always giving her facials. And my mom also grew up infusing and pressing oils and grease. And I was lucky enough to frequent grease as a child and do this with her and my yaya. I didn't realize how special it was when I was a kid. My yaya was also an incredible chef. So we would go and pick herbs in the morning usually for a meal. And then we would use the leftover herbs for making beauty products, whether it was like a face oil or a balm, hair oils. And I remember those bottles. I mean, they were like these thick hand-blown glass bottles with like, I mean, a cork and like rope. It was just like so like, yeah, so beautifully Greek. I wish I had those bottles still. And yeah, I was just really lucky to be exposed to that as a child. And then I would say that from there, a big part of why I ended up going into aesthetics, I never really thought about this as being one of the reasons that I directly went into aesthetics and going to a university. But I went to a really difficult, prestigious, like boarding school for high school. And I always felt like academically inadequate. And I struggled there a lot. And I leaned into art there and back. I leaned into the like my craftiness from childhood. And I did end up feeling like, okay, well, maybe I should go like in the direction of art. And I did end up applying to art schools. But I never really felt strong in art either. I felt like I couldn't draw I wasn't technically good at art. I was just like crafty. So when I did end up applying to art schools and I actually got into, you know, a good one, but I just felt so nervous about going down that road again. Like here I go again. I'm going to be feeling inadequate in a tough school. And so I sat down with my parents and I said, I just want to be an esthetician. And so I started looking into the best aesthetic schools that I could. And at the time, the best thing that I could find was sort of like getting a PhD in aesthetics. And it's called Sodesco. It's an international license. After you come out of that program, you're automatically a trainer and a nutritionist.
Wow.
Yeah. You end up getting your massage license because you just do so many hours of massage. You learn the anatomy of the body. Yeah, it's a really in-depth course. It took me about a year because I went straight through, but usually it takes people a few years to complete. at the end, you write a thesis. And I wrote my thesis on essential oils and their effects on the skin and mind. And then, but like my one classmate, she wrote hers on makeup and doing makeup for black and white photography. So as you can see, you could really just like go down any path you wanted.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great program. So after that, I had convinced my classmate, Jessica, we'd become best friends. And I convinced her that we should just open our own shop right away. And so we found a space in Russian Hill and we opened our own little shop, and it was called like the Beauty Shop or something. I can't even remember exactly. And I was so naive that I thought that I could just like finish school and open my own skincare studio. It was working out somewhat, but then literally the business burned down to the ground within 6 months of opening it.
Wait, do you mean actually literally?
Literally burned down to the ground. I got a call at 3 a.m.
Oh my God.
Yeah, from the fire department. And they were like, are you the owner of the beauty shop? And I was like, wait, what? So yeah, that happened.
Unbelievable. Oh my God.
Keep in mind, I was 19 years old at this point. I had no business owning a business. So Jessica and I decided, okay, this is a sign. Maybe we're not ready to do this yet. Let's just go apply at spas. Let's do it the normal way. And I got a really great position at a spa that I stayed at for many years. I quickly became the lead there and the head trainer for their multiple locations. I wrote the protocol on all the facials there. Yeah, it was a great place. And I stayed there for many years because of that. I also brought in the lines that we were carrying, and kind of like your typical like lines of the aughts. It's like what they, you know, like SkinCeuticals is clinical, SkinMedica, Obagi. We had a lot of that going on, but I also fought really hard to bring in a botanical line. And that was a local line. And we brought it in, and I knew right then, this is what I want to be working with, this style of product. And yeah, it was just creating a facial that was, it wasn't, you know, the sensory experience in a facial is so much of a facial. You can't forget that, right? So I was really inspired to start like going back and reading my thesis from this line. Anyways, let me rewind that. I had developed stage 3 acne at this point.
When you say stage 3 acne, what does that mean?
So I'd never had acne before in my life. And I had it was cystic acne in the jawline area, but to a level that was stage 1 would be just kind of like pustules and slight inflammation. Stage 2 would be pustules, comedones, inflammation. And stage 3, you're getting the cystic.
Got it.
So that caused me to really do a deep dive on, you know, obviously I was struggling being in the profession with stage 3 acne, and I was known for as an acne esthetician. I've always been really meticulous, so I was really always great at extractions and stuff like that. So I pulled back on all the products for quite some time for my own personal use, but I was still using them in the treatment room, obviously. And I started to obsessively analyze all of the ingredients. And it was pretty obvious in the pharmaceutical brands what the scary culprits were, the phenols and the sulfates. I mean, I didn't know back then, just looking at them, that those were irritants, but with just a little bit of research, it was pretty clear that I never wanted to use anything like that on my face ever again. With the botanical brand, I was struggling a bit because there wasn't anything glaring that I saw a problem with. Everything looked really great. I did do a lot of research on essential oils when I wrote that thesis. And it had been like eight years since I wrote that thesis, but I remember thinking, Well, I know I wrote about the chemical components of essential oils, and I know that they're not all the same, and some are more irritating than others. And when I look at this product line, I'm seeing that a lot of them are containing the same essential oils. And let me go back and look at these. And I found that many of them were really high in limonene and linalool. So I pulled back.
Just for the audience, why did those give you pause?
Yeah, they're highly irritating.
Yeah. Okay.
Those chemical constituents it's just something you would want to avoid in large quantities. Some essential oils have large volumes of limonene and some just have a little bit. If you have to put in any at all, I'd suggest, just a little bit. So I pulled back on that line as well. And I actually reached out to that founder. I had already met her and I told her what I had found and that I wondered if maybe using an ingredient sort of like this would work out better in the actual treatment room, because she wasn't an esthetician, and she wasn't interested to hear what I had to say. I completely understand now. She was busy running a business. She's like, I can't deal with this. So I set out, I knew at that point, well, I know how, as an esthetician, seeing the reactions on the table, I know what needs to change in this formula. So I'm going to do it myself. And that was that. I made my moves to leave that spa and opened up my own skincare studio. And I really only had the rose cleansing oil, which was the first product that I made. I made it to not tamper with my acid mantle at all. I just wanted it to sit on the surface and that it didn't contain hardly any limonene or linalool. And that's why I chose rose. And I never broke out again. And I definitely knew that I was onto something with that.
Yeah. And then now you have a spa yourself. And so all of this has grown to quite an empire.
Sweet. It's all been really slow and organic. And I think, when I mentioned my parents earlier, I watched them work really, really hard in the agricultural industry. I was fine with something taking a really long time and just like keeping at it, So I opened a little skincare studio and I was there for about 10 years. And that was where I developed the line, literally like pretty much underneath my clientele. I'd sort of like see if something was working, and I'd go home and I'd work on it a little bit more, and I'd come back the next day and I'd have a different version of the product. Back then I made about 200 recipes or so, and I ended up launching with six initially, and those were like the six universal favorites.
It's a fascinating story. I love hearing about people's journey into the beauty industry, because I do think it just like sheds light on the choices that they make later and their beliefs and why they approach skincare the way they do. And on that subject, I do want to ask, what is your beauty philosophy?
My beauty philosophy is pretty, I don't think it really has anything to do with skincare products, to be honest. I think that for me, I've noticed that I need to just work on seeing others the way they see me. We are so self-critical of ourselves, but we all have, so many like unique, beautiful qualities, and we have a hard time seeing that in ourselves. It's like when you go back and look at an old picture of yourself and you're like, oh, I actually looked really great back then. Why did I think I looked bad when this picture was taken? And I feel like that's the people are seeing us right now the way we see ourselves when we look back at that picture. And I guess, so many clients laying on my table that, I don't know, they're like perfectly beautiful 25-year-olds that have literally no physical flaws, and they're picking themselves apart. And you realize that's not it, right? We need to really celebrate our own uniqueness and beauties.
I mean, it's like, we think money or beauty or all these things are the key to happiness. And then you talk to people with a lot of money and you're like, ooh, apparently that's not the answer. And then, you know, you talk to people in their 20s who do have these, you know, beautiful, poreless skin, and they're just as critical. And you're like, oh God, that's not the answer either. Like, it really is.
Yeah. You're like, what's the point?
Yeah. It's like, it's something else. Speaking of clients, you mentioned that you have people come in, and you know, when they come in to see you and you're getting prepared for a facial, how do you approach that facial? I am so curious, and I love hearing about how estheticians approach their work, because as somebody who gets a lot of facials, I know firsthand that every facial is different and everyone's hands are different and everyone's approaches are different. And I love hearing about how people approach their work, and, you know, especially you, because you have such a unique point of view.
Yeah, thank you. I think that, I mean, just to go down to complete basics, I ask every new client that comes in, why is it that you came in to see me today? And I think that me knowing that, it's funny how much you can tell about a person with that answer. Not everyone wants to be diagnosed, you know? Some people do want to just be like healed. They don't want to talk about their skin in that way. But if they do, I'm certainly there for it. I think that I see a lot of people coming in with their own misdiagnoses.
Mm.
Yeah. Or, you know, their flaws, like, oh, my pore size. And I'm looking at their pores, like, your pores are large and beautiful. I love large pores. As an esthetician, I think I'm a dry skinned person. So my pores are really small and kind of tight, but not in that like flawless skin type of way that people like to think of. I think of dry skin and tight pores as like that skin's not, the oil is not able to get out there easily. And it's just going to, you know, we're just going to have a harder time as we age, those of us with those small pores. So it's all in perspective. And I think I like to teach my clients those types of things. But yeah, my facial is definitely, I'm really there to give. I want it to be a journey.
Yeah. No, I think what you said, though, about misdiagnoses and people come in with their own ideas about their own skin, I do think that's such an interesting point, especially now with social media, because, you know, we are so inundated with opinions just like being shouted at us on TikTok and Instagram about, you know, skin should be look this way and skin should act this way and X, Y, Z. And, you know, do you have these skin red flags? And, you know, all these different messages that we are being flooded with, that I do think that people have a really misguided view of their own skin in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And they're probably causing problems that they don't need to be causing by trying to get to those, what they think are, you know, the perfect skin type or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, do you find, because you're obviously talking with your clients and, you know, do you find that you are seeing a lot of this like reaction from social media in particular, almost like, you know, people coming in and having this anxiety that's built around what they're seeing on social media?
Yeah, that definitely exists. I think that the type of customer that walks into Monastery maybe is a little more well-informed. They are open to oils and they usually know what a microbiome is. So we're not getting it as much as maybe another type of spa. But yeah, it's kind of exciting though when someone comes in with that point of view that they're, you know, that their skin is a mess and they have oily skin and they want to have poreless, you know, I don't know. It's a great moment for us to teach that oil is your friend. Love what you came into this world with. Don't try to change it. Just try to embrace it. And that's when your skin will really glow.
Yeah. You know, kind of going off of that, I know that so much of your ethos revolves around the concept of healing. And in a lot of ways, letting your skin heal itself. And I am curious, you know, why is healing such a pillar of your work?
When I was doing a lot of acne facials, I found that most of it was due to the fact that there were ingredients that were disrupting the biome and things like harsh exfoliants And if they just pulled back on those types of ingredients and used things that were just more healing and focusing more on massage and getting the blood flowing, that, yeah, the skin would just start to heal, just start to look better. And that was something that they hadn't tried. I think people that are or think that they have issues with their skin, they've kind of like tried it all under the kitchen sink. But the one thing that they hadn't tried was kind of just like leaving it alone. And using a real cleansing oil is the best way to leave your skin alone. If you're using an oil that has a large molecule, one that's not able to penetrate into the skin. And so you're really just removing the grime of the day and the and anything that you've put on the top of your face, like your makeup or sunblock, and you're really just letting it be. And that means being at the pH that it wants to be, having your good bacteria being at the level that it wants to be, just letting it be. When I developed stage 3 acne and removed all of the skincare from, I literally wasn't using anything on my skin. And that was when it got better. I went from stage 3 acne to 0 acne. And I made the rose cleansing oil because I wanted something that would literally just leave everything alone. I didn't want anything to change my pH. That's what healing means to me, just basically leaving things alone.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And, you know, something that I spend a lot of time writing about and talking about and researching is how the skin heals itself and like the mechanisms behind that. And I know that it's something that you're obviously fascinated with as well. And so I do want to talk about how exactly the skin heals itself. Like when the skin is perfectly, not perfectly, but when the skin is left to function as it should, and it's kind of in its optimal healing process, like what does that look like? Like what's happening at the cellular level or at the dermis level with your skin?
So if everything is fine and there's not an infection going on, I mean, even if there is, it's going to go through something called the desquamation process. And every cell just kind of goes like shingles on a roof, sort of. It's just going to go one at a time until it sloughs off. You're always also replacing the sebum. The sebum is the thing that holds those cells together that you're sloughing off. I mean, this is just, if you think about that, like everything that is going on with your skin is just going to be, it's going to go through its process and leave. So you really don't need to do much to your skin at all, but we can make more of a glow immediately by intervening, you know, like using an AHA. We can slough those 5 layers. Your epidermis is made up of, I think it's 8 layers of skin. And then you have your dermis. And if you take off the top 3-4 layers of the epidermis, that's what's creating that glow. But you want to be careful, you know, messing with that too much. You want things to like go in the natural, like steady pace that they're meant to.
Yeah. And I'm curious about what that means within the context of skin, because on the one hand, skincare, because on the one hand, you know, you want to allow your skin to do what it's supposed to do, but we also know that we do need to care for our skin. So what is that delicate balance?
I think that making sure that it's lubricated as much as possible so that you're not becoming dehydrated from environmental stressors. And if you naturally, some people do have sort of like a desquamation like disorder, I think, like their skin is not desquamating as fast quickly as it should. And so those people do maybe need some AHA help. It's kind of hard to determine if you're that person or not. You kind of just have to play around. I think a lot of people think that their skin is not sloughing off as quickly as it should be, but it is, it's doing just fine, you know? So I think you need to like ease into like, should I be the person that's using an AHA or not? Oh, let's see, where were we?
Yeah, no, we were talking about like skincare's role in all of this. And, you know, we talked about how skin should be well lubricated. You know, some people can tolerate an AHA. You know, basically what other skincare steps are appropriate?
I think it's, you know, it's really all about just thinking of skincare kind of like the way you think about food. It's the whole like farm to table sort of, it's the same concept. You want high quality ingredients and not so many of them. Your skin is an organ as well. You should treat it the way you treat your other organs, as, least toxic as possible and simple, high quality. I guess I'm kind of the esthetician that's like, I'm a little bit like jaded by the whole skincare industry.
That's fair, especially if you've worked in it for several years. Like I think both of us have. It's easy to become jaded. Yeah. Well, and then, I think the other aspect to this too is how lifestyle plays a role in your skin's ability to heal itself. Because, your skin can only function as properly as your full body can function. And if you're, not treating your body right, the skin itself isn't going to be able to, perform its barrier function. So, when you're educating clients or when you're talking to people about skincare, what elements of lifestyle play a role?
Oh, yeah, that is definitely. I didn't mention this earlier, but that's how the whole facial starts. I'm just trying to figure out, who is this person and what are their lifestyle choices? I don't do a questionnaire because I feel that people don't really you don't really get to know someone from a questionnaire. It's much easier to just have the organic conversation. You can usually just kind of tell what sort of lifestyle choices someone's making, and they impact the skin greatly, obviously.
What are some of the more obvious ones that impact the skin?
So I feel like this is kind of controversial to talk about, but I did notice something throughout my years. I felt that I saw a lot of deficiencies in the skin, and the most glaring one, or deficiencies in the diet, that were leading to issues like inflammation, dermatitis, and acne in the skin. And the one that is the easiest to kind of spot is when someone is a vegan or vegetarian. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in that those dietary choices. I do. I think that they work for some people. And I just think that it's just really hard to do it well.
Yeah. You're not the first person to say something along these lines about that.
Okay, cool.
But I do know what you mean. It feels controversial. And in a lot of ways, it can be controversial. But you're certainly not the first skincare pro that I've talked to, especially recently. I feel like a lot of people are kind of turning back around on protein in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So there's one case in particular. I'm thinking of this one girl. This was years ago now, but she was getting married and she had really bad acne. And we were going through it all. And she was eating so healthy. She was seeing a nutritionist. I mean, she was really determined to get there, right? And I'd had this theory about her diet for a little while, but it's kind of a tough topic to bring up. And then I finally said, I want you to eat meat. Let's start with fish and let's see how it goes. And the next time she came in, her skin was so much clearer. But she was struggling to eat fish every day, because I felt that she really needed to be putting it into her diet really regularly. So then she ended up throwing in chicken. And I mean, anyways, she ended up, her skin completely cleared up. It was just every 4 weeks I saw her, it was, and by the time she got married. Yeah. So we always sort of use that case as data that we share with clients sometimes. And we have seen almost every single time someone who's struggling with their skin and is on a diet where they might have deficiencies, it's pretty easy to turn it around that way.
Yeah. No, and I do think diet is a hard conversation to have with people because diets are so personal and, a lot of people stick to diets for a lot of various reasons. So I can understand the trepidation that you might have with discussing it, but ultimately, diet is one of the biggest factors in skincare. So you do kind of have to talk about it at some point.
And your esthetician that you're seeing regularly, they can tell when you're having changges in your diet, not just from the obvious of weight loss or weight gain. They can tell by looking at your skin, but it's interesting how it's so often correlated. You're like, oh, what's going on with your... Oh, what changes have you made recently? And they're like, oh, well, I recently pulled out all sugar and all, you know, out of my diet. And you're like, okay, this is obviously putting less stress on their gut. And this is actually like really great for their skin. It's hard to tell someone, well, stick with that. Don't eat sugar ever again because your skin is loving it. But you want to just like make subtle hints, you know?
I know. And it's like, because I've gone through different phases of my life where I have, you know, been really good about certain dietary choices and then other ones where I'm not so good. And it really, even just looking in a mirror, it's just, you can just tell. It's when you're eating better and you're eating appropriately for your body, your skin just looks better. And there's just nothing else to say about it.
It makes sense.
Okay. So I know that you feel passionately about using oils, obviously cleansing oils, but then just oils broadly. And where does that come from? Where does the love of oils come from?
I think it really does come from my mom and my yaya and my childhood and the whole pressing of oils and grease. I mean, I never thought that that would end up turning into a career. But I think that oil, you know, everything that this is going to sound really like hippie or something, but I think that everything that we need is here on Earth ready for us, right? And oil is one of those ingredients. It's a nutrient-dense lubricator that already exists here. We don't have to make it. Sure, we have to press it sometimes, but it's here.
Yeah. No, I think it's a beautiful answer. And I think that the earth gives us so much and we would be fools not to use it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to like kind of ask yourself, like, how beneficial are the things that are completely man-made? Do we really need those in our life and on our skin, on our largest organ? I mean, obviously, we use technology to remove oils and we couldn't do monastery without it. I mean, my favorite oil is the red raspberry seed. And if you think about like what it takes to press out oil from an actual little raspberry seed, 2,000 like pounds of seeds or whatever to make, you know, just a little bottle of oil.
No, I mean, certainly not anti-technology, never anti-technology. I want to make that very clear. I'm very pro-science, very pro-tech, but I do think that there is a benefit to what the earth gives us. And I don't think it's hippy dippy to acknowledge that fact. I mean, science is literally the study of the earth. I think it's good to acknowledge both. On the technology front, I wanted to ask you about the sort of tools that you use in your studio, because I know that you do incorporate some of the more like higher tech stuff like LED, radio frequency, et cetera. And as well as, you know, using your hands and gua sha and you know, all of the rest. But yeah, I just wanted to ask about the various tools and modalities that you utilize and why you choose the ones that you choose.
So when I was working solo, I didn't bring in any technology into my facials. I guess at the time I sort of thought like, I don't really even have the time to switch over to using a modality. I'm so busy doing what I'm doing with my hands. But when we opened the spa and, you know, had six estheticians, I was definitely very open to what they were bringing to the table and what they were asking questions about. And we all believe in the same ethos at Monastery, but we have our own like specialties. So that's really how the modalities came about. And I love them. I'm so glad that we incorporated them into Monastery. I think that they're fun and they are absolutely, they do their job. LED is so incredible for reducing redness, like in a pinch. I mean, and if you do it regularly, you can lighten pigmentation as well. But nothing quite gives you that complexion like an LED right before you exit the facial. Microcurrent is so great for giving a lift. We do the buccal as well, but it's nice to even incorporate microcurrent and radio frequency on top after the buccal. So it's just like a double whammy, a complete lifting facial. Yeah, that's probably my favorite facial on the menu at the moment, the buccal and microcurrent. It's great for anything pre-event. Like you just want to like come in with LED and microcurrent for sure. We also do, we have the Lemas, and those are great.
I have a Lema. I feel very lucky to have a Lema. I love it.
Yeah, they're great. Do you use it every night? Are you consistent with it?
Yes, I am consistent with it. When I first got it and I did the 3-month testing period, I did use it as directed every day.
Good for you. That's really hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, there was like maybe one or two nights in that 3-month period where I didn't do it, but I really committed myself because I was writing a story about it. And I was like, if I want to give people my honest assessment of this, like I actually need to commit myself to the 3 months. Otherwise, you know, what am I doing? But that was many, many months ago. I would say I probably do it 4 times a week now.
Okay. Well, your skin looks great.
I really like it. I do. I think it's worth it.
I'm like the shoe cobbler whose son has no shoes or whatever. I have all these things and I don't use them at home. And yeah.
You have amazing skin, though. So whatever you're doing is working.
That's sweet.
Okay. Well, that leads me into the last thing I wanted to chat about is how you take care of yourself. I think the obvious place to start is your skincare routine.
Yeah, my skincare routine is simple. If you could guess, I use the rose cleansing oil every night. I don't rewash in the morning with a cleanser. I either follow up with the gold in the evening or the Ray, our retinol, followed by Attar, which is our balm that like seals everything in. That's my favorite nightly routine. Gold every other night, and then Ray like twice a week. And then in the morning, I tend to just go straight into like pressing gold into my face and following up with Flora, and then sometimes layering Attar on top of that. I mix in a powdered zinc, just a straight powdered zinc in with my Attar, and that's that. So I really keep it simple.
Well, it helps when you have very beautiful products that you're using. I'm such a fan, which, you know, I've said a few times, but I mean it every single time. Okay, you also have really beautiful hair. What do you do for your hair?
Oh my goodness. I love that you're asking me that too. Dear friends have incredible hair care brands. Rose, my friend Mara has a I don't know if you've, it's a, she's got a shampoo, conditioner, a cream serum, a hair oil.
So I haven't used this brand yet.
It's so beautiful.
The senior beauty editor on our team, Jamie Schneider, she's been on this podcast. She joins me on the podcast every once in a while. She's a huge fan. She's like, has raved about it. So I need to try it.
Mara is a genius and every product is a winner, honestly. And then my other friend, Sabrina, has the most luxurious, clean hair care brand, and that's called Sandor. And I love to like, so Rose, I think, gives more like fluff and a little bit more life to my hair. But I do have really thick hair. So I love the like weight that Sandor gives to my hair. So I like to like switch back and forth between them. Sabrina also just came out with a hair oil that is so lovely. Have you heard of Sandor?
I have heard of Sandor as well, and I haven't used it. So I need to step up my hair care game. I feel like I haven't been testing hair care in a while. I've been slacking. Do you have any makeup favorites?
I do. I'm a little embarrassed to say that my makeup game is not as like clean as my skin and hair care game, because I was at an event not too long ago, and I told this girl that she had beautiful skin, and she was like... She was like, it's Hermes, plain air. And I was like, really? okay. And I bought it and it is very nice. I also use Saie, S-A-I-E. I have that foundation and I love that as well. Merit, I use their like lip and blush little balm thing. That's really nice. I guess I'm not like a big like makeup girl, but yeah. Those are all really nice brands.
I mean, good brands that you just mentioned. Okay. And then the last thing is how you take care of yourself as a whole. What are your well-being must-haves?
Lately, I've been really into, I have two boys, and being a CEO and being a mom, I really have to be mindful of having like clean energy all the time. I can't do too much of the caffeine. So I have been relying on B12, NAD, ashwagandha. I take a supplement at night called Healthy Cell REM that ensures that I'm getting as much REM sleep as I can. But NAD is rebuilds the enzymes in your body as you age, and it helps with cognitive development and just everything. You feel more energized throughout the day. I used to run pretty regular, like 5 days a week, but my boys just went into a new school, so that's not happening anymore. But I need to like figure out a way to get movement back into. I do ride an e-bike every day, but it's an e-bike. It's not a real bike, but I try to keep it on the lowest.
It's something.
Yeah. I try to keep it on the lowest level possible. But you know, San Francisco is full of hills, so I have to put it on level 2 or 3.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. You're allowed to do that.
I'm embarrassed about the way I eat these days. I'm pretty much just like eating food off my boys' plates or like eating my coworkers' food. It's pretty terrible, but I'm determined to get back to where I once was. Because as we know, I need you for my skin.
Well, you have beautiful skin. And listen, we all go through different phases in life where we can't prioritize everything. So, you know, we're allowed to give ourselves passes. Listen, this was so fun and so interesting to chat with you. I loved hearing your story and, you know, all about your work. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. For more beauty content from the team at MindBodyGreen, you can always read along with our content at mindbodygreen.com, follow us on social media, and of course, tune into next week's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to rate and review us. And if you ever want to reach out with questions or insights or thoughts, you can find me on Instagram at Alex_Blair_. Thanks so much for your time.